Hi everyone. Chris, alcoholic.
Hi, Chris.
Thank you, Dale, for asking me to speak. Grateful to be here. My sobriety date is April 30th, 2017. I have a sponsor. I actually knew him before I came into the program, interestingly enough. 10 years before I came into the program. I have a phantom sponsor who's here tonight. I knew him several years before I came into the program. And I have a phantom co-sponsor who I think is coming down. I don't see him out here yet. Maybe he blew me off. I don't know. But anyway, glad to be here tonight. If I look a little bit like a deer in the headlights, I did a little research on public speaking before I got up here tonight. And they were saying that it goes back to caveman days, that we get nervous like this. This is as close as you get to being hunted when you're a caveman. So my brain is telling me that Billy's going to jump up and hit me with a spear in a minute. And it's got me a little wigged out. So I'll get past it eventually. I do want to start by, I'm going to get into the format because I really do respect and like that format. But I do want to say that some things have been revealed to me this week as I've been thinking about getting up here and sharing my life. I have come to believe that there has always been a God in my life and that his love for me is endless. I am a story of a second chance and a third chance and a fourth chance. You know, I've tried awfully hard to exhaust those chances and I haven't yet. And I'm grateful for it. I also believe that my God has a plan for my life. And it'd be a whole lot easier if I would just accept that, stop fighting it so much. This program's helped me to do that a little bit. That's part of why I touched on knowing some of the guys who brought me in here before I ever got here. So anyway, some background, what it was like. I'm going to try to go through this quick because this is the boring drunkalogue. Born in New Mexico, lived in Texas, Virginia, and Ohio. Been in Lake of the Woods for about 20 years now. Grew up kind of as an only child. I have a half-sister who grew up in another household. I could see now how much my parents did for me. I was sure they were against me. And everyone was against me when I was a young man. But I could see now they were not against me. They did so much for me. By far, my biggest fans. Both my parents have now passed. Neither one of them drank alcoholically. I do recall having a beer with my dad on the Lake of the Woods deck. Probably close to 20 years ago now, before I lost him. And I remember him saying, you never see me drink, and I got to let you know that alcoholism runs in the family. And that was it. That's all he said. I probably should have listened a little better. But anyway, alcohol, my relationship with it. I remember the first time I had alcohol. I grew up in kind of a strict family. I think my parents kind of gave the impression to me that it was morally wrong, perhaps, to drink. I remember being 16, going to a high school party, and I actually procured the alcohol that night. Somebody I worked with bought it for all the teenagers. I was able to talk the lady into doing that. I got Zima, which I don't know if you guys have had that crap, but it's pretty bad stuff. But anyway, I do remember. I remember that feeling. I remember it like I think a lot of us probably do when we had that first drink and got drunk. I was a pretty shy, awkward person. I know I'm now tall, dark, and handsome, but I was really funny looking and funny acting when I was young. But when I drank, and I had that first drink, I mean, it's like what Bill W. talks about when he talks about the circles forming around him. It was just that great. There was this girl at that party. I remember clearly getting a little bit tipsy. And I remember the doorbell rang and I was still a little awkward. And I said, oh, I better go get the door, get away from the girl, is what my brain's telling me. And I remember her grabbing me and saying, "You're not going anywhere." You know, I was like, "Holy cow!" You know, I chased that feeling every time I got drunk after that. I really did. I just loved the feeling. I drank for effect, and it did something for me. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time year by year, but when I was 17, by this point I had decided to try more than alcohol and made some bad decisions. Culminated one night in me deciding to see if I could outrun a cop at about 130 miles an hour, which I do not recommend. They keep coming after you, no matter how many jurisdictions you go through. I got in some trouble for that one. Amazingly, and thankfully, the state of Texas, even though you're an adult when you're 17 down there for criminal purposes, they went pretty light on me. I got a misdemeanor, deferred through probation, and it was good. The conditions were set to get me away from some of the other substances, and that was good. Ended up moving here. My parents ended up here. My dad was with the government, and I didn't really pick up my drinking until I was married. I got married at 22, pretty young. Went off to school in Akron, Ohio, of all places, which I think is pretty cool. I had no idea that Alcoholics, I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was at age 22. I don't think I'd ever heard of it. I do recall studying for finals week, being in the library at this school. And that particular school, the way they do it is you have one test at the end of the semester. That's it. If you don't pass that test, you're done. There's no A for effort, or anything that there's no grades added up or anything. You have one test one day, and if you have a bad day, it's a bad semester and a bad decision to go into that field. So anyway, I remember feeling an overwhelming feeling like I needed to drink, and I started drinking again. I hadn't been drinking much up to that point, and I drank to take away stress and for the feeling, and it was off to the races. It turns out that later on in my drinking career, I got to where I would drink, daily. I needed it. But I think one of my bigger problems is that when I drink, I tend to be a binge drinker. Like I said, I chase that feeling. And I know people talk about, shooting for the mark and either overshooting it or undershooting. I never undershot it. And it was always overshooting it. And it was, I think it was probably hard on my first marriage, to be frank. Some of the conduct that I engaged in was, I was acting, well, I was acting like I was a drunk single guy, with my wife in the other room. And that doesn't fly very well during your first year of marriage. So, I kept drinking, and I guess I felt like I rationalized it that, yeah, I can't do drugs, the field that I'm in, but there's plenty of people in my field that drink, and so I'm a responsible, I'm a grown ass man. I can drink, that's what's wrong with that. And so I drank, and it just progressed. Went through some challenging times, had some good times, got a great job, ended up moving back here after we had, our first son, and then we had another son, and then we got a divorce. Go figure. I don't blame her. I would have left me too. But she left. Here I am. I've got my kids half the time. I'm not rich, but I'm making a decent salary. It's time to live out my early 20s and my early 30s. Why not? Let's have some fun. And I did. I mean, my drinking kind of took off. I tried to keep it in balance when I had my kids half the time. They were very young when I went through divorce. They were like 1 and 3. And I tried to be an involved dad, and I did all the right things, plus I was single, so I signed up to be PTA president, I figured that'd be a great way to meet people. It didn't work. But anyway, I did, you know, start really drinking pretty heavily when they weren't there and partying. I don't want to go too much into it, but my mom growing up had rheumatoid arthritis. I don't know if you guys, people in your life that's like that, but it kind of cripples up your hands. And she had it to the extreme. I mean, by the time she was in her 30s, you know, her hands were crippled up, and people would say to me, you know, oh, go ask your grandma if you can do, you know, no, that's my mom. And so her health, you know, it was always sort of a problem for her. It was a real challenge for her. God bless her. My dad became her primary caretaker. And by the time I was about 30 or so, she got pretty sick, was in the ICU for a while, and ended up coming home. And my dad was trying to shoulder all that on his own. And good guy, you know, very good guy. He was my best friend. Responsible in many ways, but you know, at some point, sometimes people have too much, and he ended up taking his life, and that was hard. It was very hard on me. That guy was my best friend. So in the span of 2 years, I lost my best friend, my first wife, and my dad, and then, you know, what's going to happen with mom? You know, how's she going to take care of herself? She ended up living 10 more years, and she's scrappy. She did take care of herself. But anyway, my drinking was really going pretty problematically by this point. So that's what it was like for me. I mean, I was drinking to celebrate good times. I was drinking to celebrate new client accounts. I was drinking, you know, to not feel pain from the divorce. I was drinking, you know, for every reason you could think of. I was drinking only on days that ended in Y, as we say in here. And that's what it was. I did end up, well, me and a good buddy of mine, he was my best drinking buddy. He's still a good friend. We went for a walk this morning. I tend to hang out with him now in the mornings, not at night. But he went through a divorce about the same time I did. And so we started Divorce Club there at Lake of the Woods. we would drink and invite whatever women would come over. And wouldn't you know it, Lake of the Woods is big enough that there were some desperate enough women, they would come hang out with us, which was great. I did end up meeting a very nice lady in Divorce Club, and I ended up getting married again. I got married there at Lake of the Woods Church. We have a blended family of six. She brought two boys to the marriage. I brought two boys to the marriage. She worked as a teacher in one of our local schools out there, and things seemed well. I felt like I think what some would call maybe I was a functional alcoholic. I think that's what I felt like. You know, I was able to make money. I may not have had enough money to pay my taxes every year, but I at least filed them. You know. And told them I owe you. One of these years, I'll get out of that. Anyway, as far as what I was drinking, and you know, I mean, it was beer all the time, wine all the time. She loved wine, and that led to some, you know, some fighting. And you know, I remember the family dinners being pretty stressful, and just, you know, I could get so sideways to my second wife. So quickly, and I think part of that was the alcohol and just how sensitive of a person I was, not having any kind of filter. And so I get mad at her, and then I get on Facebook. Now I quit Facebook about 6 months before I quit drinking, and part of that was because I had figured out in my mind that you should not be drunk and married and on Facebook. Those don't mix. Sending out text to people you shouldn't send text out to, just wasn't good. One of my last Facebook memories, a good buddy of mine from Akron, saw his face pictured you know, on Facebook. Oh, there's Andy, what's going on? And it's his wife who's posted it. Rest in peace. You know, this guy was 37 years old when he died. He died of liver failure. And you know, that That was the guy who taught me how to drink, to forget everything I just studied for, so I could study for the next test. Back when I was in school in Ohio, and I should have seen the writing on the wall that drinking was not good for those around me. But I kept drinking. I remember waking up in the middle of the night often. I thought that was fine because it just meant I could drink again. But really, it was just I was getting to where I was physically dependent upon it. I would pride myself on, I didn't drink before I drove my kids to school, this morning, like that's something to be proud of. But I did drink before I drove my kids to school. When you're waking up at 4 and you're having a couple glasses and then you're passing out and then you're getting up and driving your kids to school. Thank God I never got pulled over in a wreck or harmed them doing that. What a blessing. I understand why the state of Virginia is so upset with that when they catch you doing it, because it happens all the time and innocent kids end up dying. So what happened? Sorry, everybody's still awake. I'm surprised. I'm very grateful. Friday the 28th of 2017, I remember I'd walked that morning with my buddy Miles that I walked with this morning and with my wife. And I don't know what they were talking about, but it pissed me off. And I was pissed. I was angry. I don't know if you guys would ever get that way, or ever do get that way, but I was angry about something. Stormed off out of there for no reason. And I ended up going to work that day. I work, the nature of the work I work in, I have a couple organizational clients that I can work from their locations. I was working from one of them. That Friday in downtown Fredericksburg, and worked all day, and then I decided I was just going to go mosey over to Brock's, and so I did, and got a probably Corona or something, and then I got another and another and another, and I do remember at that first bar, I do remember the bartender said, she'd come over, and we had this thing going at some point where she's like, "Why not?" Because I was like, "Why not? You want another? Why not? Why not? Why not?" And I was drunk by the time I left the first bar. Met some people, a group of people, ended up hanging out with them, took off. I don't know where they were going, but we wound up at another bar and then another bar. I do recall that by the end of the night, it was, I was in that, I was drunk enough that I should have been having fun. I remember being on the dance floor and I think it was more of like a college club. And here I am, like a 40-year-old frat boy. And that people don't like seeing that usually. Which that was sort of endemic of what it was like at the end of my drinking. I would get to that point where I was drunk and I should be having fun and I should be connecting with all you guys. You guys should all be smiling. You should all be having a good time. And the people I was around, they didn't want to be around me. They were done. And I was starting to feel that quite a bit. Well, anyway, I felt that that night. Remember, throwing up, of course. I don't know. I'm gonna go a little down a side note here. It's amazing. You go in public restrooms. I cannot tell you how many times I puked at bars and public restrooms when I was a drinker. I would have no problem just like blah, going down on the floor of this place. And I go to these places now and I look at them and I'm like, I put my hands anywhere near that toilet. Oh, but anyway, that was what you did when you got drunk. Anyway, I left that bar. I passed out on some construction equipment. I think in what became the new Foodie down in Fredericksburg, which is about a block from my said organizational client that I had, the boss guy, his house. And then I woke up at about 2 in the morning, and I decided it would be a good idea to drive home. And I crawled behind the wheel of my car, and I pulled out, and I went right down Prince Edward Street, right past the boss's house. Stopped at the light there, I guess, for William Street. And then I got going. And there's a light at Amelia Street. And I don't think I stopped for it. One of the two of us, somebody ran the red light. It was probably me. And I smashed into a pretty new Mustang, T-boned. And I don't remember a whole lot about it other than, the impact. And I remember thinking, something along the lines of, we'll sort this out in the morning. I got to go. I do recall, I have a vivid memory of looking to look in my mirror, and there was an airbag there. It was so irritating that this airbag, side airbag, was in my way. And I remember trying to like pull it out of the way. So I kept going. I don't know how my car went down the road. Ended up driving like 20 something miles. I was deeply panicked at this point. I think when that kind of thing happens, even when you're just three sheets to the wind, so to speak, I think your metabolism speeds up. You're panicked. You don't know what the out is going to be. Driving down River Road, my car was so damaged that it would slow down to about 2 miles an hour going up the hill. And then I got onto Route 3, somewhere there near the Wilderness Presidential Resorts, and I saw the blue lights, and it was a relief. It really was. I guess it was a Spotsylvania deputy that pulled me over. We were in federal parkland. I work in the legal field, so I knew that complicated things a lot, which was good in my favor, right? But anyway, the guy pulled me over, and he treated me nicely and with respect. And I was drunk. I wasn't drunk drunk, but I was definitely legally drunk. And they called Fredericksburg and gave me to Fredericksburg, and then they started that whole bit, going downtown. Still feeling pretty sick. I remember kind of like almost passing out the Fredericksburg Police Department, and so they took me over to the hospital, did CAT CT scans and all that. Nope, you're fine. Off to what some here call the Rappahannock Regional Resort, which it is not. And I was charged with serious crime. Well, I was charged with DUI and leaving the scene of an accident with injuries. Fortunately, the people that I hit were taken to the hospital. They were treated and they were released. Thank God. I realize that I'm the one who caught the blessing of that. I realize that that it was literally the difference of itches and ankles. I almost was, what I thought I was then. I thought I had killed someone. I really did. And what a blessing that I didn't. But again, it's just, I recognize that I caught some grace, I think, that night, and I'm grateful for it. Took me to the drunk tank. Had an interesting experience there. I remember being in there, sitting there with a much older gentleman and a younger guy. The younger guy was really into all kinds of drugs. He really ran his mouth a lot. Had some heroin problems. I thought he had a problem, and so I was trying to talk to him about, in jail, why I'm in there for my stuff. I'm like, maybe you should try to get away from the drugs. I mean, it's not good. Look at this stuff. Look at where you're at. The other thing I remember is the older guy. This older guy was there. He's like 7 DUI or something. I'm doing the analysis in my mind. I'm hearing them call to try to get bail. I'm thinking, yeah, the young guy might get it. It's first DUI, but they popped him with a bunch of other charges. The old guy's on his second DUI. Sounds like he doesn't have any money. I don't think he's going to get bail. But anyway, the three amigos, were in the drunk tank, which is just a demoralizing experience. You got to go to the bathroom in front of these guys. I'll spare you on that. But I remember them saying something that was so curious. It struck me as dumb while I was in there. The old guy said, "Man, I hope when I get out of here, I hope my fifth is still in the truck. I hope they didn't find it." And then the young guy says something along the lines of, "Yeah, I hope that my whatever he had, mushrooms or whatever else, is still in the car. I'd like to do that when I get home." And I remember thinking, "That's dumb. Look at where you're at. That's dumb. Why on earth would you want to do that?" But I was in that same drunk tank, and I had that same thought. Only my thought was masked in functionality and career, you know. Boy, this was a long weekend already. I'd like to go home and have a couple glasses of wine, you know, because that's different somehow. So anyway, I saw that afterwards for what it was. And it is insidious like that, you know. I mean, you get to thinking that it will solve your problems. And it's your friend, and it's not. Anyway, had to call my wife. That was fun, you know, after I'd left all kind of pissy the night before. You're what? You're where? You know? Wonderful woman. I cannot believe that she came and bailed me out. I would not have. But she did. And on the way home, I called my buddy Don F., who I'd met 10 years earlier. I knew he was part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew my buddy Bob over here was part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought Alcoholics Anonymous meant you went to the church to drink at night for an hour, which seemed very strange to me. Why would you guys want to go drink, talk about how bad drinking is around a bunch of other guys and go home? Why don't you just go to a bar? Obviously, I had no idea what Alcoholics Anonymous was, but went to my first meeting. Don took me, and it was a Lake of the Woods meeting, and I was welcomed with love. Now, mind you, by this point, I was pretty desperate. I was pretty sure that I had lost my career. They don't like you committing serious crimes when you work in the legal field. For some reason, those two don't match very well. And I understand that. And I didn't, you know, I felt whooped. I didn't know how I was going to get past this. And so when I got into AA, I threw myself at it wholeheartedly. But I was pretty sure that just as the profession was ready to throw me out, as soon as you all heard my stories about what I've done, there's no way you'll let me stay, right? I mean, there's no way. So I remember sharing, and I remember sharing this and that. Got drunk, and then I left the scene of the accident. These two nice people got hurt, you know, went to the hospital, and there was no judgment from anybody. In fact, there was a guy at the back of the room, and he says, "Oh, you know, I'm glad you shared that. You know, I did that one night. In fact, I hit two cars with two different sets of people, and then the cop arrested me, and I punched him." And I said, "All right, well, then let me stay for a little bit." So anyway, that's when the miracle started really happening. It was just even getting in here. I immediately started feeling relief when I would come to an AA meeting. It wasn't as if my problems were gone, but you all understood drinking, and you guys understood. You know, you guys seem to be able to not drink. You know, in the beginning, you hear people talking about, you know, so and so picking up. Yes, I'm picking up 39 years. You're like, whoa. But I do remember there was a guy there who picked up 30 days at my first meeting, and I thought, wow, if he went 30 days, I bet I could go 30 days. And you know, so anyway, met some other folks who similar age and similar interests, similar family situations, and that first year was pretty amazing. Started getting some hope. Worked through the steps with my sponsor. He believes in going through the steps. You know, he has a little pamphlet that just is different sections of the big book. And you work. He had homework assignments, you know, that you would work through, and he had me on that. We were just going through it, and I was very grateful for it. The magic really happened for me by going to all these meetings. When I first started, my sponsor said, you know, maybe you could do 90 and 90, you know, the legal assistance program or whatever that I was working with. They said, oh, did you start your 90 and 90? I'm like, why are all these people so excited about 90 meetings and 90? I don't have time for this, you know. But pretty quick, I decided, all right, I'll do it. I'll do the 90 and 90. And I got through it, and I did it. I did like 93 and 90 days. I called Dawn up. I said, I did my 90 and 90, you know, expecting like, I don't know, gold star or something. And he says, good, do it again. I was like, what? So I did it again. And you know, called up Don. I did another 90 and 90, and I'm going to do it again. Oh, good. All right. I finished the year up strong. I think it was at like 368 or something in the first year. But the meetings were great. The relationships that I formed in those meetings is what's really helped me. I mean, just it's the people. I don't know what you all thought when you came in. I know everybody's story is different, but when I came in, the thing that struck me was that here's this band of people that's supporting each other. They're very different people from each other, but they have a genuine interest in each other and seeing us not drink. And it's real. You know, it's not, you know, recovery's fine. I went to a great recovery program and all that, you know, but I also realized the business model of it and the insurance is kicking in, you know, and the money's flying and all that stuff. But hey, there's no money. This organization has no profit motive from what I can tell. But yeah, they take my dollar, but you know, their rent's like $10 a month in the basement of a church, you know. I mean, this place is nice. You're actually upstairs here, but anyway, it quickly became evident to me that you all were for real. And so maybe I should try to be for real and try to be a part of this program. Got some incredibly great hope and faith right off the get-go. I think it was either Bob or my buddy Myron. They heard me share early on, how am I going to stay sober for the rest of my life? How will I go to my son's wedding and not have a toast? You know, and I think Bob comes up over after the meeting and shuffles up to me and says, why are you worried about your son's wedding? He's in middle school. You know? Well, that's a good point. Can you not have a drink today? Well, yeah. Can you not have a drink tomorrow until you get to a meeting? I think so. What meeting are you going to tomorrow? The answer is Lignum. Lignum? Where's Lignum? You know? So I went to Lignum, and I just kept doing that day after day. Little, I accepted that you guys might be able to do this thing and might be doing this thing for real, and that maybe I could learn something from you guys. And so I had a little bit of open-mindedness. Met some great folks, including my late to arrive, but he finally made it, Phantom co-sponsor over here, Scotty. But yeah, I mean, the relationships I've made have been so helpful. I think sometimes I hear the stories in here and it's kind of like, when I drank, it was bad. And when I quit drinking, it was great, you know, but that is true. But I still had challenges, especially that first year. It was very challenging. Some of the things, some of the emotions, I would still get sideways with my wife, who, by the way, I'm still married to. You guys know that, 10 years of marriage next month, which is awesome. I'm absolutely stoked. But yeah, I would get sideways to her over something dumb. I remember, you know, it was during this time when I didn't have a driver's license for a year that she drove us all over to Walmart with the kids and we're shopping or something. And I got angry at her. And so I showed her, you know, I stomped out of there. I walked home from Walmart and, you know, I'll show you, I don't need your car. So anyway, I remember that in that point in the first year, walking past the Lake of the Woods bar, same bar I'd had a drink with my dad years before, and it looked inviting, and I called that guy, and he got me through it, and I didn't drink. It has gotten steadily better. I was so glad to get past that constant thinking of drinking. You know, sort of that those obsessions you get. How am I going to go to sleep? How, you know, the first week, it's like, how do I sleep without passing out? How do you go to a social event? How do you go to a wedding? Holy cow. I mean, a wedding without alcohol. For me, that just seemed perplexing. That was the whole point of a wedding. But I slowly started to learn how to do those things with you guys. It got, you know, easier and easier. I've also learned not to get too cocky in my recovery, and try to remain humble. I'm amazed at how fast, you know, the thought of a drink can come into my mind. I don't go to the store and just like, well, to be honest with you, when I go to the store, I just avoid that aisle. I don't have any reason to be down there, so I just don't go down there, but it doesn't call me or anything. I was on a family vacation, I guess, about 4 years into sobriety, 4 or 5 years into sobriety. And it was over in Tennessee, and my sister and I had rented a lake house. It's a good time. My son at that point, my oldest one, was in high school, had his driver's license. So sure, yeah, you can drive the golf cart around. He crashed the golf cart, and that was like $3,000 worth of damage. But anyway, it was a good time. It's still a good vacation. And I remember we're boating around, a great boat that we rented, and we found ourselves at this neat marina bar, picking up taco. It's like Taco Thursdays, which I thought was a little weird. It should be Taco Tuesdays. Everyone knows this, but anyway, Taco Thursdays, and we're there. It was a bar, it's live music, everybody's having a good time. You know, this is my thing. This is why I love boats. Everyone's having a great time. And I was just shocked that the thought came to my mind that it'd be nice to have a drink. You know, that looks good, whatever that person's having. Somehow I forgot all the other stuff. So anyway, I try to remain humble and realize that what I did there is I got to a meeting. I knew I had to get to a meeting. My family must sound very strange, but so it turns out my sister's mom, she's my half sister, she's one of us. And I've since learned, I think my dad probably was one of us too, because he just quit by the time I came around. But anyway, I've been able to share my sobriety with my dad's first wife. I know that sounds very weird, very, very strange, is what it is. One last thing, I guess I want to share with you that I've learned. How am I doing on time? I don't want to shortchange you guys, but I don't want to put you to sleep either. There's some good football games going on tonight. Sorry. One of the hardest things for me in sobriety has been this third step thing. I don't know if you guys struggle with it, but I grew up in a church. I grew up exposed to God. I have no problem. This is just me. And if you have a problem with God, I get it. Some people, you know, their spouse is killed in a plane crash or something. You know, I get it. But for me, the believing in a God thing has not been hard. When I come to Madison and I look at these mountains and I see it, when I look at the complexity of Anthony's brain over here, the way my dad would put it, he's like, you know, if you took a bunch of parts to a clock and you put them in a bag, like a brown sack, and you shook them up, you think the clock would just pop out? Probably not. I think it's numerically possible, but I think it's very much not going to happen. So that part isn't hard for me, the idea that there's something bigger going on. And I can even start to get my head around that I'm not the center of the universe, although I'm really good at thinking that I am. I have to make an effort at that. But the handing my will and my life over to the care of God, that part, it's hard. And it's something that I have to work at. I really have to work at it. And to learn to trust God and the outcome that he may, he may bring. When I came in and I had all that criminal stuff going on, instantly my licenses for what I do for a living was put into jeopardy. And yeah, part of that's ego, but I also had a family to feed. And you know, I sit around and I write about inventions. That's what I do for a living. And that's kind of, I know it's probably pretty boring. You guys are like, this is the most boring guy I've ever met. It's pretty boring, but I like it. I like it a lot. But it's hard to transfer those skills to something else that can make enough money to, like, you know, keep up with the debt that I've accumulated. What am I gonna do? How am I gonna pay for my new blended family of six as they're taking away my licenses and saying, you don't get to do what you do? So anyway, for that whole first, you know, like 8, 9 months, I was sure that if I just kept doing what I was supposed to do, and if I, you know, did the right treatment and all this, that, you know, maybe the charges would be reduced, or better yet, dropped. And they weren't. They weren't. And the way the law reads is that when you get convicted of a serious crime, you lose your license to do what I do. And so I mailed, and the way it works is they have these things called interim suspensions. and then they figure out what they're really going to do to you. But the interim suspended me in Ohio. The interim suspended me at the patent office, and I sent my notification in to Washington, D.C., but I didn't hear anything from them, which I thought was weird. But anyway, I slowly came to accept that I wasn't going to get to work in my chosen profession, which was hard because I worked hard to get there. Not my whole life, but at least for some of my life, I worked hard to get there. And all of a sudden now, it's not like I caused client harm or anything. They're just not going to let me do it because you party too hard. So no. So anyway, all of a sudden, then the miracles started happening. Even though I read the laws, the rules that said if this, then that, if this, then that, all of a sudden I had help representing me with before the patent office. They proposed this 6 month suspension, and they give it to me what they call nunc-pro-tunc, which means now for then, meaning that it went back in time. It was like retroactive. So, wow, you mean I can do patent work and be a patent agent? Wow, that's kind of cool. And so I started working through that. Then I started working with the disciplinary counsel in Ohio. And I just was honest with her and open with her and was ready to be, publicly tarred and feathered, whatever they do up there. And had to go for a trial, the whole bit where you sit on the witness stand for an hour. That's where I developed this trick. I didn't have to use it tonight. Sometimes I get really nervous public speaking, so I bring my fan with me to cool me off. The judge says, "You're the only guy who's ever asked to do that." I'm nervous. But anyway, I went through that, and all of a sudden, this was at the tail end of my mom's life. I get the decision from the Board of Professional Responsibility, and they say, considering the factors, Chris has an alcohol use dependency, blah, 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 blah. We recommend a 1 year suspension, fully stay. And I was like, what? All right, well, let's see what the court says about this, because then the Supreme Court has to sign off on it. And they did. All this was years in dragging out that I wasn't able to really do what I do, but I was able to do it supporting other people. And so that's what happened there. And then in DC, I get this call that they say, we were going to interim suspend you, but we had this guy who fought that 12 years ago. And we really don't want to get into a fight with you about it. Seems like this was a good resolution that you got in Ohio. We'll give you the same discipline, retroactive, or not retroactive, reciprocity to their discipline. And so you'll get a 1 year stay. So I never got suspended in DC. It's unreal. And these are the types of miracles that started happening, when I got into the program. I take them as a blessing. I totally get it. There are people, probably the victims of the people that I hit that night, who say that is an unjust result and you should rot in hell. And I understand that. I'm grateful that I'm not rotting in hell at the moment. I try to live a living amends to those folks, and I recognize how good of a life God has given me. I've gone on to fully engage back in what I do. I do work now that I couldn't dream of doing. I work at a profession where these people, they get, I'm already sort of like, he went to night school, and like these people are like all polished, and it's all, he went to Stanford, that's not Harvard, blah, blah, what the hell? But all of a sudden I'm getting the best work I've ever had in my career, working for, top 20 companies in the world. And then they're selecting, then this was a wonderful blessing. I feel like I'm bragging, so I'll be careful about it. I'll be careful I say. I got some recognition from said client for some work that I did the other year, saying this is one of our favorite people to work with. How did all this happen? Well, it wasn't my plan of going out, getting drunk, racking up criminal convictions and all that. That's where I believe that, I've had some help. And so you would think that I would know to hand my life and my will over to God, and I would do it. But in talking with these guys on a daily basis, I snatch it back. The one thing that I get a little relief from is I read in the big book that I think that's something we all do. We all snatch that self-will back. I'm so grateful. I think it's in that same paragraph where it talks about all we need is a little bit of willingness to turn that key. And, you know, and then all of a sudden you know, things start to happen, right? One last thing I'll share before I stop. You guys have had a guy here who shared by the name of Don Major. Love that guy. And some of the devotions that he's put out over the years. I read one the other day. I really liked it. It was talking about faith. This relates to what I was just saying. There's the faith where it's like, okay, yes, I believe God, everything's going to work out. And it feels good, you know, and it's like easy to have it. And then there's the taking steps, you know, and even when, you know, it doesn't feel good and it's not easy to do, faith action, he calls it. And that's the thing that I'm having to learn. I suspect I'll be having to learn how to do it for the rest of my life. Getting up here in front of a group of strangers, thinking that Billy's going to throw a club at me, Dale's going to come at me with some sort of spear or something. That took a little bit of faith action. It didn't feel good. I'm glad you all had me let me do it. Thank you very much for letting me speak with you guys.